There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And the thing I want to talk about today is the relationship between air power, Great Britain, and Bulgaria during the Second World War, particularly with reference to Winston Churchill's policies towards Bulgaria. Now, it's an interesting and little explored area, and you might be wondering, with the conventional picture of the war that we had, quite what Britain had to do with Bulgaria. I've been reading recently The Bombing War by Richard Overy, which is a brilliant kind of magisterial account of the different challenges and policies that the Axis powers and the Allied powers had during the war regarding bombing, which is a highly controversial and problematic area to understand. I think the way that Richard Overy puts it in the book, he says that many of the debates have created as much heat as they have light, which is a nice way of framing the controversy. But he makes a point that bombing was, if anything, a far more powerful political tool during the war than it was a military one, and all sides viewed bombing within its political context, that it was a way of delivering a fairly non-subtle message to civilian populations about what to do about their governments if they wanted to survive, or if they wanted a change of policy during the war. Air power seems to have divided combatant nations in the war down the middle, really, in how it would be employed. Britain and America saw the purpose of bombing as that of a kind of a long-range strategic system of warfare, that four-engined heavy bombers would be used in large numbers to bomb cities, destroy strategic means for creating a war industry, to destroy transportation networks, manufacturing and fuel and energy systems such as oil refineries. And this eventually, in about 1941, switches to a more overtly political, particularly on the part of Great Britain, political method of trying to wear down civilian morale, so there would eventually be some kind of regime change in Germany. The Germans, the Italians, the Soviets, and the French all saw the purpose of bombing as a battlefield technique. That what the bomber was there for was to support infantry, and so as a result, German bombers and Soviet bombers are smaller. They fly ahead of the infantry and destroy key objectives. They're used as ground attack aircraft. So imagine, for example, the Junkers Stuka dive bomber that was used as a terror weapon. The reason it makes this howling noise as it dives towards the earth is because of a kind of a klaxon type system within the nose cone. So it's specifically designed to break the morale of troops on the ground. Britain hasn't really got an equivalent, though later on in the war there are ground attack aircraft, but these are mainly fighters that are doubled up as light bombers or rocket firing aircraft, things such as the Typhoon, for example. Anyway, it's with some irony that the modern aerial bomb was a Bulgarian invention created by a pilot called Simeon Petrov. And throughout the First World War, the history of aviation is one of innovation and really learning what purposes this new technology can be put towards, and what problems that it can solve, of which there are many on the battlefield in the First World War. But on the 14th of November 1943, the first wave of Allied attacks on Sofia, the capital of Bulgaria, began with American B-25 Mitchell bombers and P-38 Lightnings attacking a marshalling yard in Sofia. The justification for this was really based around Churchill's views of the kind of the soft underbelly of Europe. Bulgaria is obviously one of the minor Axis powers and had decided to throw the lot in with Germany. The politics surrounding that one are interesting, and we'll look at that a bit later on. But Churchill was insistent throughout the war, and I've talked about this a lot in previous podcasts, on this kind of Mediterranean and later Balkan strategy, believing that a head-on clash with Germany should be put off for as long as possible, and that it would be ultimately unsuccessful. And in this, I think the British are right. America's insistence on an all-out frontal attack on Germany, probably in France somewhere, early on in the war in 1942, would have ended in disaster, because the Americans were not ready and the British had not really sufficiently recovered from the disasters of Dunkirk. This Mediterranean and Balkan strategy was not popular with the American chiefs of staff. Roosevelt appears to have tolerated it up until a point, and sometimes he'll encourage Churchill, other times he holds back. He has quite a shifting relationship, particularly with Churchill's ambitions. Often you get the sense with Roosevelt that he is far more likely to base his decisions that are not favourable to Churchill after be talking to people like Admiral King, or talking to George Marshall, these kinds of figures who are, in King's case, real Anglophobes, and in Marshall's case, perhaps an Anglo-sceptic. Bulgarians obviously can do very little to stop the Americans, and they've done, they've sort of expected this raid to happen as the tide of the war is turning against the Axis powers. But the raid itself does little more than cause panic. The raids had initially begun in 1941 as a result of the Bulgarians signing the Tripartite Pact with the Axis powers. And the Soviets, after the invasion of the Soviet Union in June 1941 and later in September 1942, did the Soviets attack Bulgaria from the air, bombing the port of Varna, where German ships were docking full of drilling equipment that was going to be sent to the Caucasus to repair newly captured Soviet oil wells. So the Soviet raid there was actually of quite significant strategic importance, not just to the Soviet Union, but to the whole Allied war effort. Tsar Boris III, the sovereign of Bulgaria, didn't want his country to join the war. Germany put immense pressure on their former First World War ally, and the Prime Minister, Bogdan Filov, was forced to declare war on Britain and America on the 13th of December 1941. And the fear for the Bulgarians was, what if the Allies took them seriously? What if they actually became a serious target of Allied bombing, knowing that they had very little in the way of air defences and couldn't do very much about it? But Bulgaria were not an armed combatant against the Allied powers, but a useful stop-off point for the Germans in the occupation of Greece and the defeat and destruction of Yugoslavia. The Bulgarian government learns pretty quickly that it has been forced to back the wrong side. In fairness, it could be argued that the Bulgarians have probably little choice in the matter, facing probably German occupation if they had been indecisive about any endorsement of the Axis. So by 1943, it was clear to the British and the Americans that the Bulgarians were in an impossible situation, that they would no doubt have Soviet armies on their territory within the next year or two, and that the Nazis were utterly uncompromising. And this meant that the country was in a situation of crisis. This crisis could be amplified by bombing. Bombing could be used as a political device that would force Bulgaria from the war. This would bring a kind of a useful advantage against Nazi Germany, possibly resulting in a neutral country, possibly even, as in the case of Italy, resulting in an allied country and a foothold in Germany's southern flank. And there's some very typical language from Churchill on his views of the Bulgarians, and he refers to them as a piquant people to whom a sharp lesson should be administered. This is not dissimilar to his views of the Arabs of Mesopotamia when he was a colonial secretary in the 1920s and a minister for air during that same period. And he really looked upon these, in his view, lesser peoples as rather like kind of naughty children.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Needed to be punished and taught the lesson for the mistake that they had made. He went on to state that experience shows that the effect of bombing a country where there were antagonistic elements was not to unite those elements, but rather to increase the anger of the anti-war party. The chiefs of staff in the United Kingdom were unsure whether this was a good idea. The result of bombing in Germany had been fairly minimal in terms of turning the civilian population against the Nazis. In fact, it had, as it German bombing of Great Britain had, hardened civilian morale. So the view of the likes of Portal and the likes of Sir Alan Brooke was that this was pretty much a waste of time. In fact, perhaps the only figure that would have supported this policy and believed it was possible to win the war through air power alone against civilian targets was Sir Arthur Bomber Harris. And it was unlikely that Harris would have been interested in diverting any aircraft from the main theatre of operations, which was, in his view, Germany. Both Britain and America went to the trouble of getting the permission of Stalin, or the approval of Stalin, for the attack. And, of course, he's happy to do so. Bulgarians assumed that the first wave of bombing in 1943 was a response to the new anti-Semitic policies of Bulgaria. Bulgarians, to their credit, and if you read the book Stalin's Curse by Robert Gallatin, Bulgarians, to their credit, were almost universally opposed to the deportation of Jews from their country. Many Bulgarians hid Jews, and other than Denmark, Bulgaria really stands out in Europe as one of the kind of the great bastions of Jewish protection efforts during the war. But the government, as Mussolini's government did, adopted the policies that were going to curry favour with the Nazis. Again, in Italy there's very little real appetite for deportation of the Jews, as nobody is in any doubt as to where they're going and what's going to happen to them. However, the bombing is nothing to do with the deportations. Both Churchill and Roosevelt were careful not to associate the war effort with the salvation of the Jews. Tony Judd, in his book Thinking the 20th Century, and again in, I think, in post-war, is really clear on this one. He says that there were sufficient numbers of anti-Semites in both Britain and America to make the prosecution of the war far more difficult if it was believed that this was a needless war against Germany in defence of the Jews, who, according to, you know, anti-Semitic mythology, had probably started the war in the first place using their mischievous and sinister techniques. So the raids in late 1943 are they achieved fairly little. 209 inhabitants of Sofia were killed, and 247 buildings were damaged. So the lesson itself isn't sort of harsh enough to change policy, and didn't encourage the Bulgarians to look to a political solution or a surrender. And so as a result, Churchill believes that in 1944 efforts must be redoubled, and he wrote to Anthony Eden to make this point, to say that now that the heaviest possible air attacks were being planned, and that this might change the politics on the ground. So in January 1944, 108 B-17 Flying Fortresses were dispatched to Sofia. Again, poor visibility. The Balkans are famed for this sort of thing. Meant that the attack was aborted. But on the 10th of January, 141 B-17s supported that night by the RAF, who flew 44 Wellingtons, devastated Sofia. 750 people died, 710 were injured, and there was widespread damage across the city. There'd been a power cut, ironically, at the time, so the air raids hadn't sounded. And this has a far greater effect, and it terrifies the civilian population, and 300,000 people leave the capital. The government moves out of the capital as well, abandoning the government districts, and starts to spread itself out across the nearby towns and villages. And it took a fortnight, really, to restore the working of the capital. But the general population don't return. They assume that a similar attack is going to occur. And the German ambassador tells Berlin that the psychological, political situation in the country had changed completely. And this meant that Bulgaria was in danger of defecting. And the so it would appear that this kind of brutal method was starting to yield results. How much this is based around the bombing, and how much this is based around the fact that the tide of war was clearly changing at this point anyway, is debatable. The Bulgarians go via the Soviets first to ask for an end to the bombing. The Soviets give them a fairly short answer: abandon the Nazis and we'll talk about it and we'll think about it. And then they go through the Turks, who are, again, a regional antagonist for Bulgaria. And whilst not in the war, they are looking to see what territory Bulgaria might be forced to give up at the end of the war. Both Churchill and Roosevelt were keen for the bombing to continue. When British diplomatic service in the Middle East wrote to Churchill saying it was probably better to suspend the campaign, he scrawled a note in the margin of the letter saying why. Roosevelt also responded, "If the medicine has done good, then let them have more of it." Which again gives you an insight into how these figures viewed nations, perhaps outside their experience and knowledge, people that were perhaps viewed as being rather expendable. It's a kind of a high-handed colonial way of thinking. But then again, you're talking about two, in essence, high-handed colonialists in one way and another. In March 1944, 367 B-17s and B-24s attacked Sofia, carrying incendiaries designed to create a firestorm. And the destruction of the city is huge. The civilian death toll is lower, but 3,500 buildings are destroyed. And finally, on April the 17th, 1944, 350 American bombers attacked the city, destroying a variety of installations, particularly the rail marshalling yard. So that year, 1,165 Bulgarians were killed in Sofia. And this, obviously, you have to take into account the fact that there was an evacuation at the time. So you can imagine the death toll had that not occurred. And Bulgaria then ceases to be a key area of importance. We know we're coming up to June 1944 and D-Day, where all aircraft, all Allied aircraft, particularly bombers, are reprioritised to the attack on Normandy. And it's inevitable, following the launch of Operation Bagration, the massive Soviet offensive in the east, that Bulgaria will simply become a Soviet-occupied state anyway. So the British and the Americans really drop the Bulgaria project. Had they continued bombing, no doubt the pro-German government would have fallen. But the policy cost, obviously, 1,165 Bulgarian lives, and arguably achieved very little. And it's this question that really occupies the thoughts of historians of aviation during the war. What, if anything, did bombing actually achieve? Did bombing achieve its political goals? Well, arguably not, in most cases. Did bombing achieve its military goals? Well, clearly, the kind of blitzkrieg aviation of dive bombers on the battlefield has an immense power, as was seen in the fall of France. But the long-range strategic bombing to wear down civilian industries, there's huge division over that. Albert Speer himself said that had the raids in 1943 continued for another 6 weeks, then Germany would have collapsed. The raids are gradually tailed off as the operation for Overlord is planned. But this evidence is kind of questionable because of the rapid recovery of Germany after the Second World War and the rapid rebuilding of industries, which became kind of the foundations for the West German economic miracle. Anyway, I hope you've enjoyed this and found it useful. If you're teaching out there and you're enjoying your summer holidays, but you want some excellent resources for the autumn, get on to my new newsletter. You can find it at outstandinghistory.com/instant-access. Okay. Anyway, I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.